Okay, good morning, everybody. Okay, we were in Perek Vav. The purpose or the goal of Perek Vav here in the Tiferes Yisrael was to figure how the mitzvahs, in fact, would bring benefit for the person, lasting benefit. How, the way he phrased the question as posed by the philosophers, Mayel Masa Hagashmi La Nefesh Lichnas Al Yidei Zeh Shetichya Netzach Volam HaNitzach. How can a physical action in this world give a person some kind of an eternal value, eternal reward, in a completely different world, in a world of a different nature? And he said, you know, look, I can understand it if we would see that it would affect the midos, which is the essence of the character of the person. So that's something which is portable. That's something the person takes with them wherever they are, wherever they go. But not every mitzvah is like that. You know, when you talk about how you shecht an animal or something like that, you know, this way you do it in the Beis HaMikdash, this way you do it outside the Beis HaMikdash, exact opposite, inverse ways. It's hard to portray that or to see that as a mitzvah of midos, as a mitzvah of character. So how do you understand how it works? So that was the basic question. He said, look, you know, if they understood phenomenon in the natural world perfectly, I would feel obligated to explain to them everything in the spiritual world. We can't even address perfectly scientific phenomena, so that they should be such sticklers and say, I can't do this mitzvah because I don't understand it, right? They're going to still, you know, they're still not going to drop their crystal vase even if they don't understand gravity, but they know that it exists, right? So you know, we don't have to understand everything in order to acknowledge its reality, but nevertheless, he says, I still want to explain it. I don't want to hide the words of Torah. So he used the opportunity, or to address this issue, he got into the classic source, which was the Mishnah, which says, the Mishnah which appears two places in Shas. I'm sorry, I'm just going to review quickly the ground which we covered last week, because we stopped in the middle, so to speak, of the Perek. The Mishnah says, both in Brachas and in Megillah, Ha'emer al kan tzipor yagiu rachamecha, etc., etc., Meshas can I say. A person who's a bal tefila, who decides to wax eloquent, and he says, Rabbeinu Shalaylan, your mercy extends even to the bird's nest, so to certainly extend to us, to your children, to the Jewish people, we silence him, right? We don't let him continue with that kind of a tefila. So the Gemara says, what's wrong? What's wrong with that? Sounds nice. So the Gemara says two answers. The first answer was because he is creating kina, creating jealousy or competition within creation, within Masa Bereshis. Right? Why do the bird's nests get special treatment? Right? Are they endangered species or something? Right? That we worry about them more than everything else? And so we talked about that a little bit last week, the Maral's approach, that the Bria, the creation, is supposed to exist as a whole. And we don't want to create tensions within the creation. Okay. But then the Gemara said the answer, which is the showstopper. The Gemara said, the problem is because you're making the midos of Hashem, the measures, meaning, not the midos in terms of the character traits, but the measures which Hashem meets out, the dictates of Hashem, you make them into rachmim, into mercy, when they're really gzeiros, they're just decrees. Which sounds like what they're saying is that why are you trying to explain reasons for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs, that, oh, he's trying to be nice, or so on and so forth, when that's not the case? Hashem just tells you to do it. Just be quiet and do it. Right? Just take it as a gzeira. That's the way the Gemara naturally translates. So this guy who's trying to say, look, I can show you from the mitzvah of the Torah how merciful you are, so be merciful to us too. Don't show me anything from the mitzvahs of the Torah. The mitzvahs of the Torah tell you that if you chance upon a bird's nest, you send away the mother before you take the children. Don't figure out what that means. Don't abstract principles from that. Don't say, oh, that means that Hashem is this, or Hashem is that, or Hashem is the other. Hashem gave you that mitzvah. Just do it. That's the way it sounds. And that, to us, is like fingernails on a chalkboard. What are you talking about? Right? That's mitzvahs. That's mitzvahs. We're supposed to feel that, oh, you know, chas v'shalom, terrible thing to actually interpret mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to be nice. Why should we say that? Why should that be the position, the answer? So last time, we went over two approaches, neither of which the Maral subscribes to. but which the Maral brings them both, and their opinions to be reckoned with. One is the Rambam, and the other one is the Ramban. Okay, so you know it's not katla kanya bag, not little, not small potatoes. Right, the Rambam in the Moir Nevuchim, right? And we discussed last time differently than in the Pirush HaMishnayos, but in the Moir Nevuchim, the Rambam says that in fact that position is the position of a certain opinion which exists amongst Chazal, but not the mainstream opinion of Chazal. And that is that we should not see or seek in mitzvahs reasoning or rationale. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us mitzvahs, He gave it to us to establish and, so to speak, to test our deference to Him. And we talked about the Rambam in the Shemayin HaPrakim in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, where he says, you know, there are mitzvahs which we have where we can perhaps appreciate their value. Over there he says it that way. And there are mitzvahs where, farkert, we're supposed to say, oh, I would love to eat a cheeseburger. It's not like a cheeseburger disgusts me. I would love to eat it, but I'm not doing it because Hashem told me not to. Right? Those mitzvahs are to exercise deference. Says the Rambam, there's an opinion in Chazal that you should view all mitzvahs that way. That Hashem has given us mitzvahs in order to establish who's boss. And that we should show that we recognize Hashem is the creator, and therefore we have to listen to Him, we have to be deferential to Him, and therefore whatever He says we're going to do, and forget reasons. Don't look for reasons. Do reasons even exist? You're just there to be obedient, to follow what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks. That's one opinion. And that's what this Mishnah reflects. However, says the Rambam, the mainstream of opinion, which we accept, is that no, the mitzvahs have reasons. They have rationale. There's a purpose why HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do things this way as opposed to that way. And yeah, indeed, I mean, the Rambam doesn't speak it out, follow through this way, but the clear implication is that, well, if we hold like that, then if a person wanted to say, Rabbeinu Shalom, you're merciful, I see from the mitzvah of Kansipur, of sending away the mother, that you're merciful, so you should be merciful to us too. It would be a good thing. Just that mission is following the opinion that the view towards mitzvahs is to be just straight, you know, it commands. Maral doesn't like it. He doesn't like that there would be suggested that there is even such an opinion, and even more so and more strongly asked, a Mishnah that appears without attribution, a Stam Mishnah, right? When there are many Mishnayos which says Rabbi so-and-so says this, Rabbi Shimon says that, and those we can say, okay, so that was his opinion. But when Rebbe, the editor of the Mishnah, wrote a Mishnah without saying he said this or he said this, he just says, boom, this is what it is, we paskin like a Stam Mishnah, right? That's Rabbi Yochanan Shita, accepted in the Gemara, that we paskin like a Stam Mishnah. And a Stam Mishnah that's repeated twice, and it's a Stam Mishnah that's not repeated twice in Uktzin and Bechairis, okay? It's in two of the Mesechtos Mishnayos that your child, you know, learns in elementary school. In other words, these are like mainstay. I mean, the Maral doesn't say that, but I say that. You know, it's like you know, this is like in the Rishus HaRabim of Mishnah, what would always have been the most regularly learned of Mishnahs, because it's Arach Chaim, you know, it's regular stuff, daily stuff. It's not for experts. That should be brought, and it shouldn't be the mainstream. Very hard to accept. So that's one school of thought. The Rambam, that he, again, he doesn't subscribe to it, for carrots. He has such a problem, in a sense, with the expression of the Gemara, they're only Gezeris, that he says, you're right, we don't hold like that. The Rambam, in a very lengthy piece in Parshas Kisetze, by the mitzvah of Kansipur, has a different approach. And the Ramban says like this, that the idea is that you're saying, when you make this tefillah, that this is happening because Hashem has mercy on birds. It's not because Hashem has mercy on birds. When Hashem gave us the mitzvah, it's not because He has mercy on birds. Now, again, don't say that Hashem doesn't have mercy on birds. Hashem does have mercy on birds. It says, Rachma Val Kol Masa. Those of you who may be learning the Daf HaYomi, in today's Daf HaYomi, we have the Gemara, which I was talking about with somebody after the Shir last week, right, of Rebbe, who, a calf, right, was once running away from the Shaychet, right, got nervous. It realized that its days were numbered, right, and it ran and it hid in Rebbe's coattails. And Rebbe said, go, this is what you're there for. L'kach nitzarta, this is what you were created for. This is why you exist, right, to be ribsteak. So the Rabbanu Shel Olam said that that was a lack of compassion. It was a lack of compassion, and Rebbe suffered for that for a long time. He suffered for that for a long time. He had terrible yisurin for many years until one day his maid was sweeping out the corners of the house, and there were some little creatures, little animals, pests, household pests that would be found there. Right, that were there, and she was like sweeping them away, and Rebbe said, "V'rachmav al kol masav, Hashem's mercy extends to everything. Don't just step on the spider, take it out by its leg and say, 'Be free,' right? Let it go. Why do you have to kill it? Right? If you can just get rid of it, so it won't bother you, but you don't have to kill it. So then, and then Rebbe's yisurin, Rebbe's suffering ended. V'rachmav al kol masav, Hashem's mercy does extend to everything. However, when He gives us the mitzvahs." He's not giving us. When He gave us the mitzvah of Kansipur, it wasn't because He's saying, "I have such mercy on the birds." When Hashem was giving us the mitzvah, rather, says the Ramban, Hashem was telling us, helping us to tool our own midos of mercy, to help refine our own midos of mercy, and to do things our way, right? And the Ramban's argument, which was also made by the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos, is if Hashem really wanted to limit our usage of animals because of mercy, He wouldn't let us shech them. He wouldn't let us wear shoes or leather belts, right? He wouldn't do that, right? Evidently, as we discussed last week, again, I don't want to go over everything, but you're doing a help to them. You're bringing them up from being simple animals to being tools of human beings, which is elevating them within the Bria, right? But still, Hashem mandates that in how you do it and exactly when you do it, that you should still do things in a way that will help develop your compassion, rather than, as he says, the notion of Taiv Shabbatim Shufay Shalamalik, right? Where, a person who's a person who's shechting animals, sometimes it takes away from the person the sensitivity which they should have to creatures. So the Ramban's approach was that of course mitzvahs have a reason. But not that we should be seen as just simply acting as Hashem's delegates to get the things done which Hashem needs done in the world. Don't think about the animal that you're being nice to, that Hashem wants it because Hashem needs you to be nice to the animal. Or even, I don't remember how at length we discussed this part of it, even when you're giving money to the poor, don't say to yourself, the way he says it is that, okay, Hashem needs that poor person taken care of, so therefore He's giving me the mitzvah because He needs me to take care of the poor person. No. Recognize that Hashem is trying to make you into the most refined human being that you can be. And if Hashem's mercy for the animals, Hashem's mercies for the poor, He could have done whatever it is that He wanted. He could have got it all done Himself. He needed no agents. He needed no messengers. He's making you the agent. He's making you the messenger because that's going to make you into a finer person. That's going to make you into a more godly person. And that's the focus of the mitzvahs. That's the idea. Hashem doesn't need, so to speak, the result. Hashem needs to refine us. So the mitzvah is therefore to make us more rachmonim, and so on and so forth. That's the way the Ramban says it. Maral doesn't like that either. He doesn't like that either. And he doesn't like it. He has all kinds of questions about it. Says, so we want to be merciful, so still, why in this situation does He tell us to be merciful? Not in that situation He tells us to be merciful. Why does Hashem say it only to the birds? Why doesn't He say it to cows? Right? Why is the mitzvah of Eisai v'Espinoilis Hishchatu b'yayim echad, the mitzvah that says the mother and the child, you shouldn't shech on one day, why does it only apply to an ox and a lamb? Why doesn't it apply to chickens? Right? If it's rachmin, why is it? We're just trying to teach you nice compassionate feelings. So then, why does it say it that way? And he doesn't like the language of the Gemara so much, right? Which is that you're making the midas of Hashem rachbim when they are only gezeiros. They're not only gezeiros, right? They're not like mindless decrees. They're decrees at a different direction. He says, okay, well that I could live with. I could say that what it's saying is what I just said, which is that it's not rachmim on the bird, right? It's about you. That's what it means. But, he doesn't like the language so much. So the Maral takes an approach which he obviously sees as being extremely different than the Ramban. But it, when you look at it, so come in, there's a seat over here. It doesn't come across at first glance as being so fundamentally different than the Ramban. But you'll see the point, the crux of where he argues with the Ramban. So first I want to tell you what he says. And I'm sort of like skip the steps of where he differs and tell you what he says. And this is really something which he says and articulated to some degree already in Perek Dalet that we learned about, where we learned about the mitzvah saseh and lay saseh, and that he's going to re-articulate in Perek Zion, which, you know, to some degree we're covering here. We'll see how we'll go. But what the Maharal says is like this: the mitzvahs are, the Torah was given for a person to be able to develop the godly component which is there within a person. Right? Remember, this is the Maharal, so to speak, Alta Torah. This is his old stuff from the Tiferes Yisrael, from Perek Aleph. Hashem created man, and he has a capacity which is beyond simply the normal physical capacity that his cousins that walk the face of the earth have. There is an neshama elyona, there's a divine soul which HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into us. How do we cultivate that? How do we develop that? How do we use it to the fullest? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a divine Torah that is the roadmap to being able to properly use and develop and cultivate the divine soul. It's the seder, it's the order of bringing out the best in that and avoiding the worst, of lessening the physical dominance within the person, the negative aspects of it, and enhancing the spiritual and the positive aspects that can be engaged in within the world. But it's divine, and it's there to develop, to nurture, to bring out the divine which is in with it, which is within us. And it's a system. The Torah is a system. It's a seder, a very precise seder of how it's done. It's a science, a spiritual science, as Rav Yehuda Halevi wrote in the Kuzri. Right? It's like the laws of nature of the spiritual world, of how it has to be done. How different does that sound from the Ramban? Sounds like different words for the same thing, right? One is saying rachmim, the other one is saying spirituality, godliness, you know. But, you know, basically that the mitzvahs are to help make us all that we can be. So instead of thinking about the birds, think about yourself. Think about the people and think about what the Torah is supposed to bring out, refinement within yourself. In that sense, the Maharal and the Ramban are saying very, very much the same thing. Where the Maharal differs with the Ramban is in, to a certain sense, as we used the term last week, right, where we didn't really get into this Maharal yet, but where we just were saying it is, was in the non-warm and fuzzy. In the non-warm and fuzzy. The Ramban is more warm and fuzzy than the Maharal. In fact, one of the greatest objections that the Maharal has with the Ramban is in his interpretation of a pasuk, which appears in a couple of places, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in the Rabbeinu, to us that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has given us these mitzvahs l'tayv lach, for good for you, for your good. The mitzvahs are there for your good. L'tayv lanu kol hayomim l'chayoseinu kayom hazeh, to be good for us all of the days, and so on and so forth. So Ramban says, see, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam gave us the mitzvahs. They're good. It's to be good to us. He's being generous to us. He's being generous to us. He's giving us a nice thing. Says Maharal, Hashem's not being nice. Hashem's being scientific. Hashem's being precise. He's not being nice. He's being precise. He's saying, I made you to be spiritual, and here's the Torah to make you spiritual. Okay, I don't like using the word spiritual. I just don't have a greater word right now. Just spiritual sounds like we should be smoking something, or I don't know, you know, but it means
incense.
The development of the divine component within a human being, which requires certain specific paths that the person has to find and has to follow.
Why are they exclusionary? They start something good to you when he does that.
Oh, so this the Maharal says, I will grant you, without question, that there would be no greater favor that Hashem would do for us than to allow us to maximize our potential. And when the Maharal put back the Torah into the Aron Kodesh, he also said, "Derachei darchei noyam, v'chol nisivaseh ha'sholem." Right? Yes, of course the Torah is pleasant and nice and everything else, but that's not where it's at. Soif ha'tayva lavai, right? The Rambam writes, when a person, in Perek Yud of Hilchos Tshuva, when a person serves Hashem out of Yira, they're doing it because, I do the mitzvah, I'll get this good thing, I'll avoid the Avera, I'll avoid this bad thing. That's a person who serves out of Yira. A person who serves out of Ava, Oysa emes mipeishu emes. He does the truth because it's truth. He does it because it's right. The Seif HaTayv HaLov HaDi Wal. He knows that, well, good things will come as a result, but that's not his focus. He's doing it because it's the right thing. It's almost what the Maharal's point he's making here against the Ramban. Don't tell me HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to do the mitzvahs because they're nice. He is giving us the precise order within which a human being must function. Precise. Yeah, it has benefits. It's good. It's very, very good. It's very good, but don't reduce it to it just being simply good. Now, when Maharal, you're looking at this, and you're thinking, why is he doing this? I mean, that's what, why is he objecting? It's like, what's wrong? If it's good, if it's nice, if the bottom line is Hashem is telling us something which is great for us, so why make an argument out of this? Why is he doing this? So this is, in a great sense, very much to a big general outlook issue which we have over here, which this is, you know, is behind the scenes in what the Maharal was arguing about, which is that the Maharal was generally adamant about treating everything in Torah as precise and absolute. So for instance, those of you who learned with us the Ber HaGaila may recall that in the very beginning of the Ber HaGaila, right, one of his arguments was about asmachta. You know, the Torah says something, we use a verse in the Torah, it's sort of like hint to an idea that the Chachamim would say later. So Rishonim, like the Rambam, said it's not what the Torah meant, it's just that, you know, once we had it, when we're Maver Sedra, we want to remember the Rabbonans also. When we go over the Parsha, we want to remember what the Rabbonans taught also. So here you're going to have a nice place where we're going to put it in. It's like a mnemonic. You know, you'll be able to remember it here. We'll take it as a hint. Maharal said, you can't use the Torah that way. The Torah is a precise instrument. Chazal didn't make drushes. When you have Chazal saying something on a pasuk, and it sounds like so far-fetched, right? It sounds like that's like some rabbi getting up at the pulpit and trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, you know, because there's a bar mitzvah and an eifruf on the same Shabbos. Well, that's not what Chazal did with the Torah. The Torah was pure. It was the word of Hashem. You don't play with it. You don't make it into, oh, we'll take these words and we're going to say it's a hint to something. There was a big school of thought amongst the Rishonim that said that that's legitimate. You understand? And the Maharal disagreed vehemently with it. The Ramban writes in the Vikuach, right, in his polemic, in the argument with Pablo Cristiani, he writes that, you know, sometimes Chazal said things, and they said them, they were like sort of exaggerated ear catchers, you know, like wake up the audience, you know, homiletic verses to capture people's homiletic explanations to capture people's imagination. Not that they claimed that was what it really meant. Maharal did bristle at even such a suggestion. No, right? Even though the Ramban and other Rishonim held that way. If it's said by Chazal, it's precise. It may not be literal. Literal and precise are two different things. But they meant something very real. And in a certain sense, that undergirds the same. Torah isn't just, you know something, it'll be really good if you keep the Torah. And part of the Maharal's argument here, which is a fascinating thing, because one could say, nobody argues with him on this, is that he says, tell me something. If it's a nice thing, the Torah, can you tell the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, thanks, but no thanks? It's very nice. You want to give me this nice thing called the Torah. It'll be a nice benefit for me. But Rabbeinu Shel Olam, lay me dovshech, lay me uktech. You know, I don't want your honey. I don't want your sting. You know, we'll do without it. I appreciate the opportunity, but no thanks. If it's good for you, you know, and that Hashem gives you, and that's the nature of mitzvahs, I'm giving you something which is good for you. So then,
like a red bicycle,
right? Remember what the Maral's, one of the Maral's follow up shatim on Ratzach Kodesh Baruch Hu Lezaches Es Yisrael Figur Chibulam Tzayra Mitzvahs. Hashem wanted to give merit to purify the Jewish people, so he gave them a lot of mitzvahs, right? So the question was, what do you mean? You want to make it easier, good, you want to do benefit me, give me less responsibilities, not more responsibilities. But the Baruch Hashem says, no, I want to make you as good as possible, so therefore I'm going to give you all these things, because that's going to help refine you. It's not that you're going to welcome it necessarily, but I'm telling you, paternalistically, this will make you better, so do it. And I'm obligating you to do it. How could the same Torah that's obligating us to do all the mitzvahs and not making them optional, how can the same Torah say, I'm doing them, you know, it's good. Right? That's the last thing you sometimes want to hear from somebody who's forcing you to do something. It's for your own good. Right? You know, it's we're uncomfortable with it because, come on, you know, like you're forcing me to do it. You know, so to make that, he's not comfortable with it tomorrow. He says, these are absolute requirements. Hashem created you with a nature that you must address. And this is the way to address it. Of course it's good for you. But the obligation of it is that much more basic. So I think again, that has to be seen as a big part of the Maral's objection, stated or unstated. L'tayvlach gives you the sense as sort of like it's nice. And the Maral took the Torah more seriously than just saying it was nice. It was real. It was real and absolute. And therefore, that's the way you have to approach it. Not to deny all the niceness, all the benefits that go along with it. Not to deny the Seif HaTeva Lovei Biglola. Okay. So that's part of the Maral's objection. But I want to go on another part of his objection, which is something which he expresses, which is very important, which hits directly to the matter at hand, which is a mitzvah of rachmim. It says, you're making the midos of Hashem rachmim when they are gezeros. Okay, so let's talk about those three terms. Midos. What do midos mean? It's a confusing term. Midos, when we speak about a term, we speak about it as, you know, are you nice, are you generous, are you patient, you know, character traits. But what is the term mida usually, or what is another way that the term mida is usually mean? It means a measure. A measure. A gallon is a mida, right? The term for your set of measuring cups or spoons are midos, right? Those are measures. Those are utensils which are used to take precise measure of something. Why we use the term character traits as midos is a fascinating question, right? And there are different approaches to it. You know, somebody wrote a book called Midos, the Measure of Man, right? That's based on one understanding, which is that the way you size up a person is by his character traits. Instead of saying, oh wow, he's 6'2", 180 pounds, or whatever it is, right? You say, no, he's nice, he's generous, he's patient, right? That's really the way you quote-unquote size him up. Okay, Sadrush, nice thing, fine thing. Another way is that, look, you know, the mida, the measure, is the way you dole things out to, right? You know, you say, okay, you want a pound of flour, here's the scale, measure it, with the way, this is a pound flour, this is the way I give things to people. Right? The midos are the way we, the character traits are the way we dole things out to people. Okay, nice, nice things. But mida, that word itself, sounds like measure. And over here, the Gemara is not even speaking about it, character traits. It's speaking about mitzvahs. Midos is the measures. The mitzvahs as Hashem's measures, Hashem's defined measures. You make them rachamim. What's rachamim? Rachamim is mercy. Love. Alright? The term, right? Man de rachim, right? One who loves, who cares for. Rachamim is mercy, it's compassion. What's gezeira? Gezeira is a decree. Right? But it comes from the term gozer to cut. To cut. Which is also, you know, some sense of like measure, something very, very specific, very, very precise, defined. So how would you read that phrase? You're making the measures of Hashem rachmim, which is like merciful, forgiving, like sort of loose. When really they are gezeros, really they are cut, they are precise, they are defined. That to the Maharal is the key line here in the Gemara. And it's his understanding of it is very much along the lines of what I've told you until this point this morning from the Maharal's attitude towards mitzvahs, which is that there's a din in mitzvahs. Din is judgment, is system, whereas rachmim is to some degree whimsical. Rachmim is, I decide to look the other way. Right? There's sentencing guidelines. The person was incriminated by a jury of his peers, decided he was guilty. Now the judge has to decide. Right? So what's the rule? So he has to go. There are sentencing guidelines. If a person is incriminated by such and such a thing, so then he's able to, He's going to do it. So the judge decides. Okay, excuse me, I'm not a legal expert. Okay, but let's say right now, okay, so his hands are tied, right? He was found guilty. He's got to give him the judgment so he can make a choice, perhaps, between giving him on the low end of the scale, giving, you know, Madoff 15 years, or he can give him 130 years. Right? You know, like, which edge of the scale is he going to do? But he's very much confined within this kind of a thing. There's some room for rachmim. Now, on the other hand, you know, with the right campaign contribution, right, you can go to the president and he can say, I commute the sentence. What's that? Where does it say that? What about the jury? What about the judge? What about the sentencing guidelines? The president or the governor, you know, on a state level or whatever it is, has the power to personally intervene without claiming any defense. He doesn't have to write any argument, any briefs, any papers to explain why. I liked his nose. I loved his money. Whatever it is, right? As a result of that, I'm going to commute the sentence. There's no system here. There's no system. Now, there's something like that in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with Midas Hadin. Bereshis Bara Elokim. The name which is used throughout the 6 days of creation, the 7 days of creation, even Shabbos, right, is the name Elohim. That was when Hashem created the laws of nature of the world, the way the world would function. In the 6 days, 7 days of creation, Hashem created the system. Elohim. He created the world with Midas Hadin. But then he saw that the world couldn't exist by the system alone. That man wasn't up to Midas Hadin. So he put in Midas HaRachmim. Amad v'shitef imay Midas HaRachmim. That's why it says in the beginning of the immediate section following Perek Aleph or the Shivas Yimei Bereishis, it says Be'ela Tolos Hashemayim Eretz B'Maram B'Yom Asos Hashem Elokim Eretz V'Shamay. What's the difference between Hashem Yudkei Vavkei, right, the name of Hashem that we don't pronounce or even spell, and the name Elokim? What's the difference between them? Elohim is a generic term. Elohim is I can say Elohim, 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 Elohim. Right? Okay. Right? Why? I'm sorry. I can't. Sometimes you can't say I say Elohim if I'm referring to Hashem. But Elohim could mean a Dayan. Elohim could mean a Nasi. Elohim could mean any force or power or authority that exists in the world. It's not just that we use Elohim when we're speaking about Avodah Zarah, Elohim Achem, we're saying, bow on you, you're not holy, so we're going to use the term Elohim. We use the term Elohim if we would be referring to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. Adu Elohim Yavayit Varshnehem. Elohim is a power. It's an authority. And it's an authority which functions usually with a system of how things go. Right? It's well known that the same gematria of Elohim is also the gematria of Hateva, right? That's the same numerical value, right? The like nature. Nature is not forgiving. It's a system. It'll always work, right? Pretty much the same way. Well, sometimes you say, well, nature is unpredictable. It's unpredictable when we don't get down to the details. Is it going to rain? Isn't it going to rain? Right? So, you know, 20 years ago, they would say, gosh, we had no idea it was going to rain. Right? Now, in that same situation, they could have told you 3 days before that it was going to rain because they've advanced in their understanding with their satellites and their, you know, meteorological studies as to what it is. Now, still they're going to be freaked out by something. They still can't predict a hurricane more than right before it's going to happen. But, you know, Bederech HaTeva another 10, 20 years of research, they'll be able to warn them 2 weeks in advance of a hurricane based on how the water is churning in the middle of the Pacific. You know, it's just a matter of discovery, but there's a system to nature, and it just goes that way. Hashem is the personal name of Hashem. There's nothing else that carries that name. It's a personal name. And Rachmim comes from, so to speak, the personal intervention. We have friends in very high places. Tshuva, the Gemara says, the famous Yerushalmi, he went to Torah, says, what happens to a person who sins? This is what happens. He went to Chachma, this is what happens. Went to Nevuah, this is what happens. Went to the Rabbanishim, says, let him do tshuva and I'll forgive him. Meaning, everything else doesn't have the power. They can just talk about the system that they know, what they've been told. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the power himself to do it. So we speak about, when we speak about people doing tshuva and getting rachman, we say, you know, we're going to bypass the heavenly court. Hashem will dig a special tunnel that ends up, opens up right in front of his throne. Chatira mitachas l'kisei hakavod. So you can bypass all the other systems that exist in the world to go to Hashem and get a personal commutation. Well, that's probably not the right word. What's the word? Commutation. Thank you. Of the sentence and a grammar lesson at the same time, right? But you right. That's rachman. That's going to the source. That's going to the rebbeinu. That's not with the system. Says the Maral, the pasuk is saying, not the pasuk. The Gemara is saying, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the mitzvahs of the Torah, those weren't Hashem saying, you know, be nice. Be nice is exercising that personal quality called Rachmanis. It's a good thing to exercise a personal quality called Rachmanis. And it's to be like Hashem to exercise a personal quality called Rachmanis. To sometimes bypass the system. To say, it shouldn't be this way, it shouldn't be this way, but, you know, this is what, I'm going to do it anyway. You know? Forgive. Right? There's a good thing called that. But that's not the mitzvah of the Torah. The mitzvahs of the Torah are the system. They're the din. They're the elokim. When you go and you take the bird, you send away the mother, take away the birds, it's not the Rebbeinu Shlomo saying, you know, really? You should just take them and forget about it. Just take them. But you know what? You should be a nice guy and send away the mother first. No. You need to send away the mother first. The system, the science of right and wrong tells you you have to do that. The Midas Hadin with which the world was created, Midas Hadin doesn't mean stone-faced harshness. I don't care. No. This particular piece of action, which might smack you as, touch you as being nice, yeah? Right? It's nice. But this piece of niceness is din. It's expected. It's legislated. It's with precision. This is not that thing called overlooking or forgiving. This is a real din. Don't make the midos, the measures. Measures are consistent. Don't make the measures of Hashem into something which is a nice gesture. That measure is precise. There's a famous kasha. I think we referenced it a few weeks ago. I don't remember exactly at which point in our discussion. Excuse me. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bidvarei. Famous kasha, which is attributed to Rab Chaim Vital, the Talmud Muvak of the Arizal, that asked why in the Torah it doesn't give us specific mitzvahs about midas. Right? Such an important thing, and it's left to some degree unlegislated. Now, of course, there are mitzvahs in the Torah, plenty of mitzvahs in the Torah about all kinds of nice things we're supposed to do there. So the mitzvah of tzedakah is repeated in the Torah many times. And we have a mitzvah also called V'alachta Bidrachav. You should walk in the ways of Hashem, which is ultimately the mitzvah of midas. But it's far less defined than, you know, Hilchas Shabbos or Ribbis or Kashrus. You know, that stuff, you know, really, you look at it straight. Here, much less so. Famous Kasha. Right? In a certain sense, the Maral here is a cornerstone for addressing that question. Is that, yeah, of course there's something called Rachmim in terms of Midas. But Rachmim is specifically non-legislated. There's the point beyond the system which Hashem created, the systems of absolute truth, called the place for personal intervention. Or, in God's case, we wouldn't use the term personal, but individual intervention. That's not to be legislated. The Rachmim that's legislated in the Torah, yeah, it's legislated to the extent that it could and should be. Beyond that, there's something called but pulling at your heartstrings, going to your feeling, to be a Rachum, to be a Chanun. Yeah, great. Maral's not a non-fan of that. But when you look at the specific commandments of the Torah, that's a different kettle of fish. That's the precise instructions of the true order of the way we're supposed to go about life. Now you understand that this mindset which the Maral creates is fundamental to our appreciation of zehirus, of care, when it comes to fulfilling the mitzvahs of the Torah. I alluded before to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who sort of speaks about this thing. The metaphor which he brings a few times in the Kuzri when he's talking about mitzvahs is the, you know, just like you go to the doctor and he prescribes to you a certain medication, you know, so you don't know why it works or how it works, but he told you that works. He knows how to do it. You go to the manufacturer, he tells you, turn this thing, do that thing. You don't understand why, but you know that. There's a science to it. There's a reality to it. See, the Kuzri started, I remember the Kuzri is a story. It's a sefer written as a story, which was a mechanism which was used by many writers in order to convey ideas. Instead of just writing chapter and verse, instead they presented it in a process of a dialogue, a polemic, whatever it is. So the Kuzri is a story about the king of the Khazars, a state within whatever, Mesopotamia, Turkey, that he was a righteous person and he had this dream. And the dream was, he heard, your intentions are good, but you're not doing the right thing. Your intentions are good, but you're not doing the right thing. Kavanoscha retzuya, avu masecha inam retzuya. And he had this dream night after night and he could not ignore it. So he went about searching for truth, for the right thing. And he goes to the Christian, and he goes to the Muslim, and he goes to the philosopher, right? And they all met in a bar, and there were a few good jokes that came out from it, right? And then he goes to the rabbi, right? And the rest of the book, right? The Christian gets dismissed pretty quickly. The Muslim gets dismissed pretty quickly. The philosopher a little bit more slowly, but also pretty quickly, and then on to the Jew, and that's the rest of the book. And by the end of the first of the five sections of the book, he converts, right? And he's asking him questions about Yiddishkeit. In a certain sense, the whole book is to answer that question, to explain that dream, which keeps on going, which was the fight against the Karaites in the time that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote his book. It was the fight against the Tzedukim in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. It was the fight against Korach in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's the fight against non-Orthodox movements within Judaism today, which is that our temptation is always to sort of say, we mean well. This seems like the right thing to do. It makes sense to us that this should be nice and proper and appropriate. It's nice. It's good. Let's do it. Kosher means nice. So it means that, you do everything in a compassionate way. Right? And so on and so forth. And that's the case. Now, of course, I agree wholeheartedly, we agree wholeheartedly that there's something in the Torah called Tsar Bali Chayim. Right? But that's not all that it is. That's not all that kosher is. In fact, to say that that's what kosher is a terrible misrepresentation. Kosher is the Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, the first section. The laws of Shechita, the laws of Nikur, of taking out the parts of the animal that can't be eaten, the fats and the sinews, whatever it is that can't be eaten. The laws of salting, right? To take out the blood. The laws of keeping the meat separate from the milk. That's the laws of kashrus. And of course, choosing the right animal. Right? Those are the laws of kashrus. There's another realm in the Torah called Tsar Bali Chayim, right? Which maybe it's De'eraisa, maybe it's Drabana, whatever it is, but it's certainly something. That story that I started with you with Rebbe from today's Daf Hayomi. Daf Behei in Bava Metzia, right? Of course, there's something called the Tsar Bali Chayim, but that doesn't come to kashrus. Kashrus is precise and prescribed, and it's specific. And there, it's not just you mean well. There's a right and there's a wrong. Your intentions could be pure, could be good, could be wonderful. Your compassion is praiseworthy. Don't reject the compassion of people who don't understand that there's a science to Torah. Right? Sometimes we respond by pushing back. Say, these guys, they're saying, just be nice to the animals. It's not nice to the animals, it's Shulchan Aruch Yerideya. No, it's Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, and you also should be nice to the animals. By somebody reducing it to just being nice to the animals, then they're rejecting the truth, the Seder of Torah. But if somebody's just going to say the Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, they're rejecting the Rachmim of Torah. So this is the Maral's understanding of the Gemara's objection. And so he takes issue even with the Ramban. Because the way the Ramban is saying it is, the Torah wants to make you into a nice person. Nice is not good enough. The Torah wants to make you into as divine a being as you can be. Now that sounds more structured, more real, more defined. And that's exactly what he wants it to sound like. So of course, it'll be the best thing for you. And of course, Drachei Darchei Noyam V'chol Nesivei Seah Sholem. But see the Torah as a very precise map. A very precise directional guide to maximizing the divine components of a person and how he can achieve that within this world. Questions, comments? Is it less warm and fuzzy?
It makes me wonder. I've understood that, for example, Avraham, the wells, actions as Avraham to bring out his chesed side because he's Mr. Musafin. But at the end of the day, he's still digging the same wells. So I wonder if there's sort of a parallel here. The actions themselves are actions that must be taken. Now, there can be an underlying element of Rachmi and recognizing that Kosh Baruch was Rachmi and his cheshbon and why he gave us those mitzvahs. But at the end of the day, those wells need to be done. Those laws of kashrus have to be followed. These mitzvahs have to be followed. And the exceptions may be within Hashem's realm of Rachmi. You know, he can do the pardons, he can do the commutation of sentence. But when it comes to our doing them, whether we want to approach it from warm and fuzzy as an underlying principle, whether we want to approach it as the gazer, because this is what we have to do. We can do either one, but we have to do the actions. Is there any parallel between the Avraham Yitzchak model to what's being discussed here?
There is. There is. You know, in that Avraham Avinu was motivated to do them, and Yitzchak did them with gevura, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do them, and therefore he did them. And in a sense, we see Avraham Avinu as his actions emanating from chesed, and therefore he, you know, he just wanted to do these things. He wanted to do these things. But I think that it's to say that it would therefore imply that in Avraham's case it was sort of just this like general, warm, imprecise goodness. Chazal had a very interesting expression. They asked, you know, there's this tradition which Chazal have that the Avos kept the Torah before it was given. Only one problem. If it wasn't given, how did they know it? So how did they know it? So, you know, if you were talking about Avraham Avinu, and you would say, how did he know it? You would say, he knew it from, he was just so self-motivated to do it. Which part of his body would you say self-motivated him to do it? I would guess that you would say his heart, right? Avraham had a big heart. He was a person of love, a person of chesed. He was motivated to do the right thing. Maybe you would say his brain, right? But, you know, his heart, you know, Avraham Avinu, he was all heart. He was chesed. Yaakov Avinu was all brain, right? Avraham Avinu was all heart. Chazal say Avraham Avinu did it because of his kidneys. Kidneys. What does that mean, kidneys? Like he said, he called his kidneys Rebbe. He had two Rebbeim, right? Kidney one and kidney two. I kidney you not. So what's the idea? Because the kidneys are filters. The kidneys are filters. The kidneys, right? The stuff goes in, and the kidney separates what's right from what's wrong. Avraham Avinu was intuitive. He was good, but it was this discrimination of separating the good from the bad. From a world which is confused of Taruvos Tovara, you need to make that separation. You have to be able to separate them. So yes, to some degree, there's a positive way that a person can positively define that, and there's a way where a person will say, well, I will defer to what Hashem says. There's a way the person can hit on it, realize it, and there's a way that a person will only just do it because they accept it from above. But the precision, one would still have to see as being there. Now, does Avraham Avinu have, perhaps as one of his nesiones, where he has to develop in Yirat Shamayim, that perhaps his inclination would be more the personal than the systemic? Maybe. Maybe. But sum total, after all is said and done, what the Maharal is putting forward, he said, he views as being essential to seeing the clear picture. It's a system. There's room for the personal, but beyond the system, there's a system, a very serious system. Torah is not to be taken just as something good and nice. It's the goodest thing, excuse my English, it's the best thing, it's the nicest thing, right? But, you know, that's like saying, you know, antibiotics are very nice. They're very nice. They're almost like a very nice thing, antibiotics. It's true, they are very nice. But, you know, that's not like a teddy bear. It's not a placebo effect, right? It's real. And real is nice. You know, when real helps you for a good thing, it's nice. Huh?
It's real nice.
It's real nice.
How does he deal with the issue of, and it's so real and clear for those who are rebelling and reject it? They're idiots. It's almost as he's eliminated the effect of the Bechira here. It's so clear, it's so real.
It's so real and it's so not clear. Meaning that you're sitting around here, you're taking this from me. Why? Because you're plugged into the Messiah. We know that there's a Rabbeinu Shel Olam who spoke to us at Har Sinai, right? And he gave us over his laws, and they're eternal, right? So when you have that, you say, okay, so that makes sense. Hashem isn't just, you know, this, that, the other thing. You know, it was real, it was eternal. It was that premise is the premise which has been challenged by every group that I mentioned. You know in the listing before. Now, is the Torah, certainly the Torah Sheba'al Peh, right? But many times even the Torah Shebichsav, right? Today we have graduated, right? In the time of the Tzedukim and the Karoim, all they challenged was the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Now we have the theories of biblical criticism, etc., where even the Torah Shebichsav, right, is not believed to be divine. It was written by several authors over a several hundred year period around the Bayis Sheni. That's what people would believe, right? So then, it's just people using their judgment. This whole language has the rug pulled out from under it. Right? When you understand that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and it's eternal values, so then you can speak about this attitude. But when it's something which is, you know, given in a certain time, in a certain place, by people who were finite and limited in, you know, their perspective and who they were, forget it.
We reach them too. And we understand the Messiah. How does that explain us to faith?
Yeah.
Hard to do.
Lots of explanations for that.
What bothers me a little bit is how Chazal sometimes come and, I don't want to say modify the Torah, but where do they go and sometimes impose restrictions or impose? I can't see going, for example, the Torah says you should blow shofar or Rosh Hashanah, right? They say, oh, but Yekek Zayir says, be careful, Shem Yaver and Al Amos. If it's such a precise science, who are we to tamper with any science?
That's essentially what the Maral deals with in the first section of the Be'er HaGadol, the first Be'er of the Be'er HaGadol. Not necessarily phrased in exactly that way. The question is, there's a mitzvah leisaisifu and leisigru, right? The Torah says you're not supposed to tamper with it. So where do the chachamim come? So he explains everything that the chachamim came to do is because within the Torah they were mandated to do those things. Some of them specifically, and some of them generally. When the Torah says you're supposed to make a mishmeres, Kadosh Baruch Hu is empowering a chachamim leisasuru mikol davar sheyagidu chayam leisas megadav sheyagidu chayam and ismael. So yes. Many times, in fact, there are places where the Chachamim would not go. They would not go. They would not see it as being a valid thing to tamper with. They're not allowed to be mevatz to certain things. B'kum v'aseh, even when your example of the Shofar on Shabbos, so they somehow felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu indicated that that was the case. You know, again, using Maral thing, the Zichron Teruah, right? You know, they're taking some kind of indication, veiled indication that there's something to do. Yes, it's of course more challenging to understand within the world of precision.
Oh, right. What is right. Science? Was it all, you know, something beyond our understanding in reality? Maybe you have a glimpse or something. But
so remember what Chazal say, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that a child becomes an adult at such and such an age. And if they're ma'aber the shana, if the chachamim go down and they add a month to the year, so then what happens? It'll be a month later. To some degree, to the extent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu empowered the chachamim, mitzchuni banai, you know, giving the power over to people, to some degree gives them the control of the science too. Gives them the control of the science. Hashem says, I'm going to go according to what they say. To some degree, He gave it over. Now, you know, again, it gets more vague as we start talking in these terms, but none of that is writing out the
customizing
reality.
I don't understand it, though. The Gemara uses the Chad Achinoy to figure out what's the Hadol, and how does that work, and
The in the next parak, the Maral brings a little more. He doesn't address those specific examples, but he says, "How do I deal with this with Racha Darchinah?" So we'll have to look at it, have to deal with it. It's not simple because there again, like, it reconfigures what the Torah is saying because of Racha Darchinah. I understand it's a rule. So where do you learn from here that by Zika, that because it wasn't this way, it can't come back? How does that influence the rule? It's a serious question.
Proving so that at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be Dachin. Because at the end of the day, so that you would have a habit that grows thorns, it's also kosher.
Right. It just helps you learn originally which one the Torah meant, huh?
Right. Yeah, but right. How does that work into it? See the next part.
I can understand how the gazeros and the takanos are an integral part of the system and an intended part of the system, but how do chumros fit in?
Depends what kind of chumros.
Well, if there is an idea, like you were saying, that it's a science and a precise truth, then shouldn't the halakha be the final thing that is best for us in order to...
So there are two things. First of all, there are chumros which come from sfeikas. In other words, people, right. It could be this way, it could be that way. I mean, you find in the Gemara says, "K'dayu Rav Shimon l'smechala b'shas hadchak." You know, you can rely on Rav Shimon's opinion at a difficult time. So there's an attitude of chumra which goes the other way, which is, "K'dayu Rav Shimon l'hachmer k'maysay shalai b'shas hadchak." You know, normally the halacha will be like this, but if I can, I can worry about what may be the truth, which is. Again, it's all within the science. You know, it's just a cautionary approach to science. There's another piece to it, which is the approach. You know, the Shlo and the Ritva, in their own way, the Ritva, of course, much preceding the Shlo, said when we talk about the Asmachtas that we spoke about before, that they were hints which HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the Torah to show things which he wouldn't mind if we did. And at a certain point in time, when the Chazal saw that it was appropriate, they legislated it. But until that point in time, it was there just as a hint. And as a hint, it's something which a person could choose to adapt. There's such a thing as a midas chasidus, as a person going a little bit beyond. And that's, to some degree, when a person says, takes on a chumra, a personal chumra, not changing what the Torah says. Now they're trying to read between the lines as to something that may give Hashem nachas, but wouldn't demand of everybody that they do. So he leaves it as a hint in the Torah, so to speak, but not directly. So I think there are two kinds of chumras. One kind of chumra is, a person has halachic doubts and therefore they want to use a better safe than sorry approach. And the other one is where a person feels that they want to adopt a personal higher standard. Where we get in trouble with it is where we legislate and say that has to be everybody's when we're not the chachamim to put it across the board. When there's such a supposed to be a mainstream. That's what it's like.
Can I ask you a technical question?
Very quick. I just had
one.
Yeah.
From the shearing of the taping here.
Yeah.
Online.